Hi, I'm Sean. I've always been curious about the answers to life's big questions. I thought it would be cool to seek some of those answers through conversations with others on a similar path. I started this podcast with a simple mission. I want to help you improve your life. These conversations are meant to challenge you, make you think, and to inspire you to pursue the things in life that light you up. I've always believed that with the right mix of effort and perseverance, anything truly is possible. I'd like to invite you to think outside the lines. What's up, everybody? My guest today is a pioneer in the fields of light, vision, and consciousness, and the author of numerous books. His latest, Luminous Life: How the Science of Light Unlocks the Art of Living, illuminates the seamless connection between light, vision, and consciousness, offering a whole new way of seeing and being. His work has been lauded by best-selling authors and world-renowned thought leaders, from Eckhart Tolle to Deepak Chopra. His insight is profound, and I'm so excited to share this conversation with you. It's time to think outside the lines with Dr. Jacob Lieberman. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jacob Lieberman. How are you this morning?
I'm wonderful. How are you doing today?
I'm fantastic, and I'm really excited you're joining us from Hawaii today.
Oh, yeah. It's always a good place to join from.
Can't deny that. I'd love if you could start off by telling me, what do you believe to be the message you were brought here to share with the world?
Exactly the message we're going to be speaking about today. And let me see if I can explain that. You know, when I was about to take my West Coast tour, a friend of mine took me to the airport and another friend saw us and he said, "Are you going with him?" And he said, "No, I'm his ventriloquist." And it sounded sort of funny, but then I realized something. When we watch a ventriloquist, we don't see their mouth moving, but we see the mouth moving of this little character we call a dummy. And we're so entranced by it that we think the dummy is speaking. The same thing is true in our own life. Essentially, each of us has a purpose for being, not only each of us as a human, but each of us as an animal, or each of us as a plant, like an apple tree has a purpose to create apples and so on. So my sense is that much more than we can even begin to imagine, our lives are being guided. And when we get into a conversation like this, I get the feeling that something is actually speaking us, something is actually communicating our purpose through us. So for me, what is it that I would like to share? I think only what I know by heart, only what moves and inspires me to be the individual that I am, and to share the kinds of things that I share. And I think the main message is that the same animating force that is guiding the movement of the planets, the changes of the seasons, the movement of the tides, the pumping of our hearts, the breathing of our lungs, is animating every facet of our life. And if we are fortunate enough to recognize that truth, then we can begin to experience luminous life, even when we're not feeling well, when financial things are not as we would like them to be, or when we're going through difficult times.
Wow, that's powerful. I like that. I like that a lot. Now, I watched your TED Talk, which was really awesome. In it, you say something that really resonated with me. You said, at a certain point of our lives, we realize we know absolutely nothing. And I have to say that I love that so much, because that for me was the epiphany I had that inspired the show. I think life is about curiosity and wanting to understand things sometimes that are bigger than ourselves. And so I'm incredibly excited to have you on the show today.
Thank you.
And share your insight with my audience. Now, your story really is a fascinating one. Earlier in your optometric career, you experienced a sudden, significant, and lasting improvement in your vision during a meditative experience. I'd love if you could talk to me a bit about that experience.
Yeah, that happened 42 years ago. I had been investigating, the possibility of improving my eyesight naturally or becoming less dependent upon the glasses that I had been wearing for 9 years, because without them on, I could just see the large E on the eye chart. So I needed them for driving, examining my patients, and doing, you know, day-to-day type of activities. One day I went into my daily meditation practice and something very different occurred. All of a sudden, the sense of self, the sense of me, Jacob, meditating, seemed to just dissolve or disappear. And all there was an awareness of was clarity. Everything seemed clear. When I say everything seemed clear, even though my eyes were closed and my glasses were off, there was an ability to see myself in the room meditating. I couldn't tell from where the seeing was happening. It seemed to be occurring from everywhere. And not only was there optical clarity, but there was a clarity about everything. There were no questions, no thoughts, no concerns. And when I came out of this meditative experience, to my amazement, my eyesight was clear. Because I was a practicing optometrist and vision scientist at the time, I immediately drove to my office with my glasses on the seat next to me because everything was crystal clear. I got to my office, I examined my eyesight, just checked myself on a variety of different eye charts, and I was seeing 300% better. And I needed to figure out what had happened, so I decided to actually examine my eyes to see if there was a change to my prescription. Lo and behold, when I completed that process, to my amazement, the optical measurements of my eyes had not changed at all. In wow. other words, my eyesight improved 300%, wow. but my eyes didn't change at all. And so then the question that comes up is, well, the eyes are obviously involved in seeing, but there's obviously a lot more involved in our ability to be aware of the world than just the physical eyes. And so that set me on a journey. And to give you an example, it's now 42 years. I'm 70 years old now. I've never worn a pair of glasses for distance or for reading since that day in 1976.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, I think the beauty of the experience is not that I had a healing of my eyesight, but I recognize that change, real, profound change, does not involve doing something over and over again like an exercise. Real, profound change can and often does occur instantaneously in response to an epiphany, a revelation, seeing something that we have never seen before in a totally different way. And when that occurs, my sense is that it's possible that our humanity, every aspect of our humanity, can shift back to a default setting, the way we came in, if you will, and give us an opportunity, as they say in the movies, to take two, to begin again. So for me, that experience which I share, the importance of it is not my personal story. The importance of it is that it lets us know that things are possible way beyond anything we have been told, and that what we can really trust, the truth that Jesus said that would set you free, is a truth that is beyond belief. In other words, it is beyond our opinions about things, which is crucial because most of us are living life according to our ideas about life rather than the reality of life itself.
Yeah, I mean, yes, that's really powerful. My question is, okay, so you say that this came to you through a meditative experience. And I think there's probably a lot of people listening right now, myself included, that meditate, but I've never had a transformative experience in that realm. So my question to you is, was there something that you were particularly open to, present for in that moment, you think, that led you to this?
No.
No?
No. You know, everyone asked the same question. Tell me what I need to do to get that effect.
Yeah.
And my old friend Ram Dass wrote a very famous book years ago called Be Here Now.
Yes.
If it was supposed to be different, he would have written the book Do Here Now. And the reason that he didn't is because our whole life has been conditioned by an idea. And the idea, which is manufactured by the mind that thinks or worries, is that we have to make things happen. We have to think ahead. We have to work hard at things.
Yeah.
What I discovered many, many years ago in working with probably 10,000 kids that had learning problems or had been labeled as having learning problems, and also working with Olympic class athletes and professional athletes, is that effort actually impedes success. Every time we start thinking, we stop breathing. Every time we stop breathing, our field of vision narrows, and everything in our life that was flowing becomes stagnated. So the process of doing, which is what everybody wants, because that's what we've been conditioned to do, is not what it is. The meditative experience was merely the experience that allowed something to happen. How it occurred, we could call it grace. But I will tell you something that is of value. So you say you are a meditator.
Correct.
When you are meditating, what is it that you're doing?
So for me personally, I think the first few moments of meditation for me are always trying to let go of my thoughts. And then it comes to a point where I become conscious of the fact that I actually need to surrender to my thoughts as opposed to attempt to let them go, if that makes sense.
So let me share something for your consideration.
Yeah.
And for our audience to consider. What if these thoughts are not yours?
Okay.
What if the thing you call the mind is not yours? It's merely something that you are aware of. So the reason I asked you, what are you doing in meditation, is I think a big aspect of meditation is noticing.
Yep. I would
okay.
Agree with that.
So what is it you're noticing? You sit down and you begin to notice that the body that is normally moving a lot begins to feel a little edgy, not doing something.
Yeah.
So you feel all kinds of sensations in the body, and you're aware of those sensations. As you sit there a little longer, you're aware of the mind.
Yep.
It starts chattering. It starts doing a variety of different things. And that is absolutely crucial. Because what's crucial about it is the only reason that we are aware that the mind is chattering, that what we call thinking is occurring or worrying or anything else, the only reason we are aware of that is because we are observing it.
So I'm very much aligned with that, actually. That's I believe I first read that concept in The Untethered Soul. Basically, the idea behind that, if I'm getting this correctly, is that we are not our thoughts because we are capable of observing our thoughts. So we are the thing that is observing the thoughts.
So that is not an idea.
Okay.
That is absolutely a fact.
Sure.
A truth. I'll give you an example. Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote a magnificent little piece, and this is what he said. He said, there is a principle which is the basis of all things. Let me speak about that. So he said, there's something that underlies or fundamental to everything. He said it is a simple, quiet, undescribed, undescribable presence dwelling very peacefully in us. And then he says, we are not to do, but to let do. Not to work, but to be worked upon. So what Emerson is saying is that there is an aspect that we are all aware of within us, which is noticing everything,
yeah,
which is witnessing everything. Now, let me differentiate that from what we call mind. We can recognize mind because we hear it speaking, and because it speaks in duality. The observer I speak of, the witness, number one, does not speak. So if you hear a voice, it's not this place.
Interesting.
Number two, it sees from no point of view.
Yeah.
It sees from no point of view. And when that occurs, something incredibly powerful is potentially there. I'll give you an example. About 1,400 years ago, a renowned Zen patriarch named Sengsten wrote an incredible piece called the Sin Sin Ming. And listen to a few lines of the first verse. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. In other words, the truth is only evident when one is seeing from this undescribed, undescribable presence dwelling peacefully within us. Jesus said it in a slightly different way in the Gospel of Thomas. He said, when you see up is down and down is up, when you see the outside and the inside the same, when you see a man as a woman and a woman as a man, then you shall enter the kingdom. All of these things, all of these wise people are saying the same thing. When we uncover the essence or the source of who we are, that which is observing, that which is witnessing this experience, which does absolutely nothing, then you begin to realize there's nothing to do, that it is all happening by itself. And you say, no, I don't get that. What do you mean? Well, you know, every morning, whether you have your alarm on or not, you wake up. Every night, whether you force yourself to go to sleep or not, at a certain point you get tired and you fall asleep. When you get hungry, you don't have to remind yourself you're hungry. If you have to use the restroom, something takes you there. When you are supposed to bring something forth into the world, all of a sudden, in the middle of a restaurant, all of a sudden this incredible inspiration comes to you. And you start writing it down on a napkin. And somebody says, what's going on? And then you say, I had an incredible thought, because the mind wants ownership. But you didn't have that thought. That thought had you.
Yeah.
That inspiration came free of charge. And it is that inspiration that moves us toward implementation. Why are we implementing? Because we are implementing whatever needs to occur in order for us to fulfill our purpose for being. And that guidance, that inspiration, is actually light. Not only does that inspire the great epiphanies that enter our life, but that light is literally communicating with every cell in our body 24 hours a day, and directing the movement an orchestration of the internal part of that cell so that that cell is continually synchronizing itself with Mother Nature. In other words, the primary purpose of light is to upgrade the software of our humanity so we are always living at our maximum potential. It's no different than when you're sitting on your computer and all of a sudden Apple or Dell or whatever sends you a software upgrade. And that software upgrade is actually to bring your computer up to its maximum potential. Except what's happening with light is going on 24 hours a day.
So you talk a lot about light in your work, and I'm actually curious to know, what do you believe to be the relationship between the scientific and spiritual aspects of light?
They're absolutely the same.
Interesting.
There's absolutely no difference. What we call our spiritual life is our life. What we call our everyday life, that's exactly the same as our spiritual life. When you look at a tree, you don't think that the tree is just what's above the ground.
Yeah.
Because you know that something three times the size of the tree is underneath the ground, and that's what's nourishing the tree, and that's what's stabilizing the ability of that tree to grow and develop. Well, you could say the roots are the spiritual part of the tree that we're unaware of. When you look at an iceberg, only 10% is above the water. But the thing that really impacts you if you're in a ship is what's beneath the water. What's impacting our life are all the things we do not see, all the things that we have absolutely no say over. Why is life designed that way? Because this entire universe is animated in such a way that everything is working harmoniously. And in order for that to occur, what is animating one thing is animating all things. And so everything must stay in a state of congruence and coherence. Another word for congruence and coherence is presence. But presence is not about doing something or being present. Presence is the natural result of following that guidance that we are continually receiving, noticing what catches your eye, and realizing that what's catching your eye is actually looking for you. And it's looking for you to guide you on the next step of your journey. So I'm not speaking metaphysically.
Yeah.
I'm speaking from my own absolute direct experience. And this is what actually occurs in my life on a day-to-day basis. And what I have found is that science is validating all these things, but science is well behind direct experience because science is looking for theories and so on.
Sure. So the word that keeps popping into my mind as we have this discussion is surrender. And I'm curious to know, because I'm very much aligned with everything that you're saying, but my personal struggle, and I'm sure a lot of people listening right now can align with this, is I want to surrender. I want to believe that everything is falling into alignment for me, but I also have like these external struggles that I'm faced with every day that cause me to, you know, feel the need to propel my own life forward and make my own decisions. How do you reconcile those two things?
First of all, you cannot surrender. The mind is like an octopus with all of these tentacles that's always reaching. I like that. I don't like that. I want that. I don't want that. That wanting mind, which in the East they speak of as desire, desire is a function of grabbing, wanting. That function cannot let go. It's a function that's designed to grab, not to release. That's number one. So that idea sounds interesting, but I don't find that it actually works because you're trying to use the part of the system, the mind, that's built for grabbing to do something that it cannot do. So that's the first thing. What was the second question you said about you said something about the struggles of your mind?
Yeah, it's just reconciling the struggles that we face in the mind every day with the concept of surrender. Because though you say that that's not necessarily possible, I think that the moments in my life in particular when I have let go, surrendered, whatever word you want to put in there, have really been the moments that the most clarity has been
You're absolutely right, but
present.
that happens without you. That isn't you letting go. That's a moment of grace when all of a sudden, rather than looking through the beliefs of the mind, you are seeing through a place of no point of view. And in that moment, a miracle occurs. Let's talk about that for a second. The whole field of mind-body medicine is built on a very simple fact. Every belief is mirrored as a state of biology.
Sure.
Okay? So we know that to be the case. But what happens if you have no point of view? If all of a sudden you're not looking through this particular perspective or this particular perspective, then the body stays right in the center. It remains in the middle rather than being pushed artificially to one side or the other because I won the lottery or I had an automobile accident, whichever it is. So much of our conversation is today is about our beliefs. People say, "Oh, that's just your belief system." You need to change your belief system. Because we create our own reality, and you do that by choosing. Well, the mind, the conscious mind, makes choices. Another word for those are judgments. But this other place I'm speaking about, the one that doesn't speak, that sees from no point of view, it is a state of unconditional acceptance, which means it is choiceless. It makes no choices. It merely delivers that which we need, which may not be what we want. It's crucial to discover the difference, whether our beliefs actually true. See, when we argue about things or have these discussions, we're trying to, in some way, figure out how we can make it work that their belief is different from my belief. Well, if you look the word belief up in a thesaurus, you'll find out that belief means the same as idea, thought, theory, concept. But if you look at the antonym, the opposite of belief, you'll find standing out brightly the word truth. In other words, none of our beliefs are truths. They're just temporary ideas. Science is a beautiful field, but it is not based on facts.
Interesting.
It is based on theories that are continually evolving, which means you never actually get to truth. You just keep changing, getting a change of ideas. That's the way evolution works. Direct experience is the ultimate truth. What is a direct experience? A direct experience is something that occurs when the observer is the same as the witness. When that which is noticing from no point of view, then the experience is truth. The truth that sets one free. And so there are all kinds of life struggles. If we run out of money or lose a lot of money, nobody's happy with that situation. I don't care if you're the most enlightened person in the world. That stirs up worry.
Sure.
And it does it for an ant or a horse or a plant or a human. It stirs up worry in all creatures. When something happens that's unexpected, it stirs up worry. that is a natural thing that occurs because the mind wants three things: safety, security, and predictability. But none of those things have ever existed on the planet. In a world that's continually changing, there's no safety, security, or predictability. So what I'm sharing is that we have been given a manual for living life that is based on the way our parents and ancestors lived life and the way the outside world appears to be living life. And part of that indoctrination is that you are your mind. You are this thing that is always talking and thinking and trying to figure things out. I discovered years ago that most of what we call thinking is actually worrying. It isn't.
It isn't true.
It isn't any sort of an intellectual prowess that we have over plants and animals. It is just a process of worrying because we're scared.
Yeah, that's true.
Because reality is not matching up with mentality. But in essence, what's actually going on, what is natural, is reality. And almost all of our pains are related to the fact that reality doesn't match our mentality. And that is really difficult for us. You know, they say that pain is natural, suffering is optional. And that's what we're talking about. Everyone who is alive is going to have, is going to be sick at different times of their life. I don't care what they do, whether they have the cleanest diet or they meditate 100 times a day. They're all going to get sick at some point. They're all going to have issues with money at one time or another, or relational issues, or whatever kind of issues. That's what comes with life. That's why Buddha said life is difficult. What makes it suffering is that we don't realize that this is a natural part of life. We've been led to believe, and the New Age is really doing this in a big way, that if something doesn't go perfectly the way we want it, it's because we chose improperly.
Or that we have complete control over whatever's going to happen, and that's just not true, right?
It's absolutely not true at all. If you really look, there's an incredible amount of neuroscience that really is looking carefully at when does the brain know that we have made a choice. And you think, you know, there's so much talk about free will. I choose this, I choose that. But no one ever bothers to ask, is that actually true? Is that my direct experience? Do I know anyone who can get what they want? Has there been anyone in history? Did Jesus do that? Did Ramana Maharshi do that? Does the Dalai Lama have that ability? Speak to them, they'll all laugh because they had the most difficult lifetimes of anyone. So you have to examine what we are sharing and what you are reading about. Examine that against your own direct experience. If that is not your own direct experience, then you have to wait until it is or something else becomes evident, because when we think we have made a conscious choice, the brain has recorded that decision and has started moving in that direction 7 to 10 seconds before we think we've made a conscious choice. So who made the choice then?
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, these are the things that I share in the book, not to discount free will or any of these things, but to pose common sense truths, to pose some very, very high-level scientific evidence so that people can say, well, wait a minute. What's the reality of that? Because if you're led to believe that if you don't get what you want in life, then you're screwed up. There's something wrong with you. What is the value of that?
Yeah, and so many people are. I mean, I think that that's why you have people walking around on antidepressants, and you know, just there's so much depression and anxiety in the world, and it's a result of that thought specifically. One of the things you say is that I read in some of your materials that you said, when we say "I see," what we're really saying is "I understand." And right. I'd never looked at it that way before. I think that's incredibly powerful. Can you talk a bit about the difference between vision and eyesight?
Yeah. Eyesight is just the ability to see a symbol, to see a tree, to see a letter, to see the monitor. Vision has to do with how our system responds to what it is that is being seen. So seeing is one of the initial steps. But how that seeing influences everything we do, that's called vision. And that's why someone who allows that process to guide them is called a visionary. Let me speak a little bit more about that. Most of us think, like for instance, I'm looking out my window now and I see a whole grouping of eucalyptus trees and birds are flying and I see the sky and the mountains across the way. And that's what I think seeing is all about. But the eyes are designed to detect and respond to a single photon of light. One single photon is the smallest bundle of energy that exists. It is just the an infinite potentiality. In other words, a photon, which is what light is not a thing. Light is not a thing. It's just a field of potentiality, the same as consciousness. That's why consciousness is often referred to light. This is why God is referred to as light. This is why physicists say the ground of reality, the energy from where everything arises, is the energy of light. The eye, the physical eye, detects this energy, this light, in its formless state before it has been rendered into the forms that we experience as our life. And so the process begins with something grabbing the attention of the eye and literally moving it to come in alignment with that which has called it. That which has called it, which is light, is the same light the Bible speaks of as God. It is that which is directing the eye at what it needs to attend to next in order for survival, in order to fulfill its purpose for being, in order to do whatever it is the person has to do. As the eye moves, the body then moves with it and realigns. That instance of connection between the eye and the light is called presence. At that moment, we are being downloaded with a directive, a guidance that is illuminating our journey. The body then begins to move. That process of movement, that completion, is called vision. So vision is essentially how our lives are navigated, and a visionary is someone that is allowing that process to take them to what people call visionary insights. But those insights are given to the person free of charge. I remember many years ago I was reading an interview that someone was doing with Einstein, and they said, how did you discover the theory of relativity? And Einstein started laughing, and he said, ah, that came by itself when I was playing piano. Well, that is essentially how it works. That is essentially how it works. But for a person that's been, for all of us who have been indoctrinated, brainwashed, conditioned our whole life to believe that we're making things happen and that we have to do all of these things to survive, is what creates the world of competition versus a world of cooperation. And so this book, Luminous Life, is really about sharing, it's like a manual for living. It's sharing some very fundamental things that have come to me over the last 45 years that have changed my life, my health, my outlook, my wellness, and has allowed me to share that in a way that can potentially be contagious.
I love that. What, when you sat down to write the book, what was that your intention, or did you, like, what was your specific intention, and what do you hope that the reader will ultimately take away when they read this book?
I had no intention at all. The intention was the intention of the universe that inspired me and moved me to attempt to express what I cannot say in words in a way that it might make sense when you read it. I think each person needs to merely read the book, because each person is seeing from a different place. Each one will be touched in a different way. For some people, the book may not be the thing at this moment, and then they may have to pick it up later.
Yeah, right? I agree with that, actually. And that's one of the things I was going to say, is this is a read that you want to absorb. I don't think that it's something that you're going to sit down and read cover to cover in one setting, or one session, rather. I think that you need to kind of just let it affect you how it's meant to.
Yeah, because, you know, it's reading only confirms what you already know.
Yes.
So if it's something that you know inside, it will magnify that truth, and you will know that some part of you knows it. If you haven't come to that place in your life yet, there's no way of understanding or relating to that. The feedback that we have gotten, I mean, the book has only been out a month, but the feedback we have gotten has been quite extraordinary. In fact, you mentioned The Tethered Soul, and I wasn't familiar with Michael Singer until I awoke this morning, and a very dear friend said, you need to reach out to him. I think the two of you have a collaboration in the works.
Wow, that's crazy. And I agree with that. In fact, as I was reading your book, there are many echoes of his work in the text.
And it's funny because I had never heard of him.
That's so interesting.
So I have to see if there's a way of reaching out to him, just to, because obviously there's another kindred spirit out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
What do you hope will be the legacy of your work in this realm?
Oh, that people will say he was just a hardworking, ordinary guy for whom truth was everything.
For whom truth was everything. I love that. I love that very much. I always like to end my conversations on an uplifting note. So I'd like to know, what has you hopeful about what you see in the world today?
I am hopeful. And I'll tell you why I'm hopeful. But I'm hopeful a lot, because obviously there's a lot of things that appear crazy in the world right now.
That's true.
World is upside down, which is what exactly occurs before a total paradigm shift. When things are looking to change or about ready to change in a big way, the world starts getting totally nervous and crazed, which is what we're seeing on every facet. A woman in Miami last year said to me at a talk, "How do you deal with evil?" She said, "There's so much evil in the world." I said, "There's no way of dealing with evil." She says, "What do you mean?" I said, "You can't deal with it because the people that you perceive as being evil, they believe they're doing God's work."
That's true.
And you cannot convince someone that requires convincing. I said, however, if you can identify your reason for being and you can just allow that to blossom, your actions become the antidote for those pieces that you perceive as evil. I said, for me, this time of my life is about planting seeds of goodness. That is what is obvious to me.
Yeah.
I love helping people. I love sharing my love, my caring in whatever way I can. And in the process of just following that yellow brick road on my life, I fulfill my reason for being, which makes a contribution to humanity. So I'm just doing my job, and if everyone does theirs, we end up exactly where we need to be.
Amen. Amen. I agree with that completely. Dr. Lieberman, this conversation has been incredibly insightful for me, and I'm sure for the audience as well. In fact, I will say that I have an endless list of questions that I didn't even get to because I was just so enamored with listening to your insight. So thank you so much. I'd love to maybe have you back again sometime where we can explore some of these concepts a little further.
It would be a pleasure.
Awesome. If someone listening right now would like to connect with you, maybe and explore your work further, please tell us how we can do that.
They just log on to jacoblieberman.org, O-R-G, and Lieberman is spelled L-I-B as in boy, E-R-M-A-N. That's a wonderful beginning.
Awesome. And I'll make sure that all of that is in the show notes as well. Well, again, thank you so much. And I know we went a little bit over, so I apologize for that. But again, I really appreciate the conversation, and I hope we can connect again sometime.
You are delightful. No need to apologize. It was a gorgeous way to start my day.
All right. I want to thank Dr. Lieberman for joining me today. I'd also like to thank you for listening. Now, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And please share this episode with anyone you think could benefit from hearing it. Now, you can always find the links for everything we talk about in the show notes, which can be found over at thinkoutsidethelines.com. And feel free to drop me a line with any questions or feedback on the show. You can send an email to hello@thinkoutsidethelines.com. Until next time, go out there and pursue your passion today, because the best way to predict the future is to create it. For more information, please visit thinkoutsidethelines.com.